Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. This is Literary Viewpoints, and this is going to be really great. The title of the book is Big City Heat. The author is David Burnsworth, and I really wish the rain would stop because this way I don't have to listen to it patter on my window. But this is going to be a great show, and I would like to welcome Cheryl from Partners in Crime, who's listening, and they do the best blog tours in the whole universe, trust me, and I hope to do another one with them really soon. So good morning, David. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, thanks for wanting to do this. This is great, and I'm glad I was able to change the date with our two in one day. Okay, so Lowcountry bar owner and Marine veteran Brack Belton heads to Atlanta in the wake of a panicked 3LM phone call. That must have been fun. His woman is missing and Brack's friend Mud is in danger. Brack's old flame investigative news correspondent Darcy Wells, I like that character too, now lives there and is set to marry another man. If Brack was honest with himself, and he usually wasn't, he realized that missing the woman isn't the reason for his visit. His Semper Fi buddy Mud can handle things just fine, and I'm not going to tell you anymore. So, Brack has an unusual personality, and he always seems to stick his foot in his mouth in the wrong places, and yet he's always willing to help him. When taking the job of finding Reagan, why didn't he think it through and ask more questions and just made it, you know, that his friend asked? Why did he just do this?
Well, Brack
he just decided to go to his friend, yeah.
Brack is an ex-Marine, and so he was trained to be loyal, and he's not a professional PI. He's what they call an amateur sleuth, so he's more about helping his friend, and, you know, he understands that right is right and wrong, and his friend needed help, and so that was his whole intent in the book is to drive to a different city and help his friend and make sure his friend didn't get into any trouble.
Well, he sounds like my mother that would tell me the same thing. If somebody needs help in the family, it could be 2 o'clock in the morning. Just stop what you're doing and do it. Sounds right. So tell us about his friendship with Mutt. I like Mutt.
In the first book in the series, it's called Southern Heat. We're introduced to both Brack and Mutt. And Brack, in that book, his uncle gets killed, and in trying to look into who killed his uncle, he stumbles across Mutt. Brack's uncle had served in Vietnam with Mutt's father and was helping Mutt financially. Mutt had a bar in a really bad part of Charleston, and Brack's uncle, because of his friendship with his father, was helping Mutt out. And when Brack befriends Mutt, he really, you know, he wants to help him out too, and they end up teaming together to find the killer of Brack's uncle. And so from the first book in the series, they've kind of been Mutt's kind of been Brack's sidekick along the whole way. So I really like the pairing of them together. I think they make a good team. They're both ex-Marines, although Mutt's a little older than Brack. They, in one way, they play to each other's bad side because they're both willing to take things to the next level to get something done, whether it's the right thing to do or the smart thing to do or not. They're willing to back each other up.
So who is Cassie, and what is her relationship to Mutt? I liked her, too. And why didn't he want her to know that he owned a bar? What was he afraid that was going to happen in their relationship? I like that character.
Cassie, she also came about in the first book. She owned a restaurant, and it was a restaurant that Mutt would frequent. And when Mutt decides to move to Atlanta after the second book in the series, she follows him there because there's a love interest. But Mutt, because of his hard life, he was a hard person to get to know. And he just didn't feel like sharing with her that he decided to open up another bar, basically a speakeasy on a back street of Atlanta. That was just something he just wanted to keep to himself. But Cassie's a smart lady, and she figures out that he's got this bar open because one of her friends ends up working there, so unbeknownst to Mutt. So they're both interesting characters, and they both know how to take care of themselves.
Well, the character I really liked the best was Tara, seriously. I like Tara because you can't mess with her. She's smart, not you can't fool around, and she seems to have a soft side. When creating her, how did you come up with these two personality qualities, and do they help or hinder her in the novel? I really like that character. You have to bring her back, I hope.
She's a lot like the protagonist, Brack, because she's very loyal to her friends. And I think that's a great strength, but I think that's also a weakness because you tend not to you tend to focus on your friend's positive qualities and not realize that they might be taking you down a bad path. So Tara is a very strong woman, both physically and just from a personality standpoint. You know, I really enjoyed creating her, and when she kind of took over her scenes, I really liked where she was taking the story and how she interacts with Brack.
Well, she and Brack really have like a love-hate relationship too, and she doesn't take any guff from him or anybody else, and she's definitely my kind of person. So we have tell us about Shelby. Because these are cool, and why this dog is such a great character, and how he lets Brack know you better knock it off and get in line, and I'm running the show here. So tell us about the dog and his relationship, because I like the dog. You had to bring the dog back too. You can't kill the dog.
Oh no, definitely not.
Oh good, so, at least I feel better now. You can't kill the dog.
No, never. So in the first book, when Brack comes back from Afghanistan, he's just trying to get his bearings, and he gets a rescue dog, and it's Shelby. And Shelby's like a 45-pound chow lab kind of mix, really pretty dog. And to Brack's annoyance, Shelby's a lady killer, because anytime they're together, all the women swarm around Shelby and ignore Brack. So I really enjoyed writing Shelby in and how he's just a little manipulator. But he's also Brack's center in that Brack, he's somebody that Brack gets to focus on and take care of. And at the same time, he's there for Brack if Brack had a bad day. So just keep being able to write them. And, you know, Brack comes back from a bad time, and he gets to walk the dog and kind of recenter himself. And I just really like their interaction together and how he can't put Shelby in too much danger before he has to he realizes that he's got to take care of Shelby first before he can go forward. So I really enjoy writing those two together as well.
I think everybody could use a Shelby, seriously.
Yeah.
Anything to send to them. I used to have a bird. And I used to talk to the bird and play the piano at the same time. It made me, you know, less tense when I had 75 tests the next day. Everybody needs a Shelby. So who is Reagan, and why is she with Vito? And tell us about both of them.
So Reagan is Cassie's sister. Cassie was the restaurant owner who moved to Atlanta with Mutt. And she's the reason that Brack has to go to Atlanta after that 3 a.m. call. Because Reagan ends up missing. Cassie had, when Cassie moved to Atlanta, she had asked her sister Reagan to move down with her because Reagan wasn't doing the right things when she was living in New York City. And Cassie thought, well, maybe a fresh start in Atlanta would help her out. But Reagan turns into, she doesn't stay on the good path. She goes back to, I guess, the dark side. And, Cassie's concerned about her sister, and Mutt starts looking into why Reagan's missing, and there's a lot of danger in that, and that's why Cassie calls Brack to kind of help. Reagan ends up with a man named Vito, and Vito is one of the main kingpins in the Atlanta underworld, and it's exactly the wrong person, but for Reagan and where she is in life, it's the right person for her because she's just into power and control and money and drugs and sex, and Vito has all of that. So she connives her way into Vito's heart, and that's kind of where the story picks up.
Yeah, I know. But she has to really think what she's doing. So why is Vito considered dangerous, and what exactly is he into that he wants to keep going, and he stopped by Brack's interference? Who is this guy? And don't bring him back, please. I don't like him.
He, well, because of his position in the Atlanta underworld, he's got a lot of power. Mm-hmm. And when Brack starts looking into finding Reagan, and he figures out that Reagan is with Vito, then he starts kind of chipping away at Vito to get to Reagan. And because of Brack's history, he's not one to just shy away from things. And Vito, he didn't get where he was because he was stupid. He's an intelligent person, and he realizes that Brack is probably a threat. And Brack probably, initially, he needs to be stopped because he could put Vito's other businesses in danger.
So I'm surprised he didn't go after Brack and try to kill him. That's not good. So every time he and his group go on a stakeout, this really got me, to try to take down the bikers that work for Vito, why is it they always get some and not others? He's a character with pros and cons. How would you define him? I mean, they try to go after him, and then they don't get him, which made the story more believable, believe it or not. Because I think that if they caught him right away and they never got in trouble or never loose some of them and solved it right away, I would say, like, oh, that's not going to happen in real life. You don't ever get anybody at one time. So how come he went on a stakeout and he never really got what was supposed to be done? How did you create that?
Vito has a big empire, and he's got a lot of people working for him. So it's kind of like, not exactly, but it's kind of like a Star Wars film where you got all these stormtroopers, and, you know, you can't kill them all. So when Brack gets into a situation with some of these guys, you know, he might get a few of them, but he's going to take some licks as well. And Brack's good at slinking out of situations if he gets in too much danger or unless he gets rescued by the police, per se, or something like that. But for Brack and his interaction with Vito's guys, you're exactly right. It wouldn't be believable, if Brack wiped them all out, because that's just not realistic. But at the same time, Brack is just trying to chip away, I guess, to get closer and closer to Vito.
Well, I'm reading from the review that I wrote, which happens to be really good, I think. Brack, when he starts a job, I wrote this really great. I take my time when I'm writing, and I just pray each time that I don't mess up ever, but I don't. But you know, Brack, when he starts a job and has a goal, there's no way he's going to quit until he takes down the person that's standing in his way. And when you created that in him, I said, well, he may not always get what he wants, and they may, you know, get messed up because the bikers don't get, but yet he's that loyal. Is that, that's one of the qualities that you would say that he has?
Yeah, he believes in right and wrong, and his friendships and his relationships are very important to him because he doesn't have a whole lot of them. So when he starts something, he's going to take it to completion. He's going to protect the person and try to eliminate the threat. As soon as the threat's eliminated, then he feels the job's done, but he's not going to let up if the threat's still there for his friend or whatever situation they're in.
Well, the other character that I like is Detective Nichols. He says it the way it is. So when Brack finally gets involved and Detective Nichols meets him and they hate each other to start with, why does he offer him a one-way ticket back to Charleston and say, like, you know, you don't have to get there, like, just leave. He doesn't want him there.
Well, it's kind of like the same reason that initially Vito senses about Brack, and that he can be a very destructive individual if the stars align and he can attack just the right point. And Nichols realizes that, like everybody else, he's got enough work to do as it is, and he doesn't need a loose cannon running around his city that he's going to have to clean up after. So he really just wants Brack out of there. And so he tries to persuade him, and then he warns them about, you know, the next time we see you or you're involved, we're going to put you in a cruiser and get you out of here. Basically because he doesn't want the casework and he doesn't want the hassle. He's got enough to do on his plate at that particular time.
Well, I have a question that I just thought about. Tara and Shayna are the bartenders. Tara has this thing with Brack, so she goes on a stakeout with him. Why does he let her come? And then as a result, she really gets shaken up. She can't believe what happened. So how come he took her along?
Well, sometimes you kind of alluded to it. You know, I like Brack. I think he's a strong character, but sometimes his weaknesses are he doesn't really think things through. And, you know, he's thinking, well, it's just a stakeout. We're just going to, you know, sit in the car and watch a house and see if somebody leaves or shows up. He doesn't really think, well, there's the potential where they could start shooting at us, which, of course, is what happens. So he kind of has to learn things the hard way sometimes. And the fact that he put Tara in danger, he has to regroup and realize that there are people who haven't experienced war and being shot at, even though that's kind of second nature to him after coming back from Afghanistan. That's just part of life as far as he's concerned. But there are people who haven't had that, and they have a tough persona until somebody starts shooting at them, and then you kind of see, oh, well, maybe they weren't as tough as they initially thought, or you know, that's kind of when reality sets in.
Did he have PTSD? I mean, my nephew came back from Afghanistan. He had went three times, I think. And then you come back, he's sort of like, he reflected back on his time in Afghanistan, didn't he? So that sort of affects him also.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's sort of like a derivative of PTSD in that he actually kind of craves the action. And when he gets back into normal society, it's normal society, and most people are law-abiding citizens, and he doesn't have the danger that he's kind of gotten addicted to from being in war. So he kind of creates chaos around himself too, just because that's part of his. He's not. He kind of had a drinking problem, but he's got that under control. Mm-hmm. But he's got this action Jones that he just can't shake, and so the more action for him, the better. But sometimes he'll drag other people in and who aren't used to it, and then he's got to realize that, you know, just like any other addiction, there's collateral damage.
Yeah, he seems to be thirsting for danger, and when he's in danger, he seems to be at his top notch. He's like, that's what makes him. It's like the adrenaline in him that he has to have it. So when you created the bar scenes and the end results, that too made it more believable. So these type of things could happen in for real life, wouldn't you say? Some of them?
Yeah, I think, well, in the story, the bars are kind of, it's like a place for Brack to sit down and regroup. But if somebody's tailing him, they've kind of got him cornered. And I guess I wrote, as a side note, I probably wrote a lot about bars because in my 20s, I probably spent too much time in them. And so based on that, I have these bar scenes in the book. But what you always hear about bar fights. And so I kind of like having a bar fight or two in my books. It just kind of makes things interesting. There's not a lot of gunplay where there's fisticuffs. And I like showing the bar fights. They're kind of fun to write.
You should watch Bar Rescue. You can see a lot of bar fights. You ever watch that?
I've seen one of those. Yeah, I've seen a few of those.
Yeah, my husband's addicted to John Taffa, and some of them, they're all staged, some of them, but the bar fights are really good. I mean, somebody could really write a book using the bar fights on Bar Rescue. So tell us about Darcy and why she, this is a good character, by the way, she could get information that Brack can't, and why does she want to help him? She's really cool.
Darcy and Brack have a history. Yeah. Again, I like to have continuity in my books, and Big City Heat's the third book in. But Brack meets Darcy. There's a connection there in that Darcy's a news correspondent, and she was one in Charleston where they met. And Darcy actually was working for Brack's uncle, who was murdered, his ex-wife. And they had just kind of rekindled their relationship. And so that's the connection with Darcy and Brack, in that she also helps Brack investigate who really killed his uncle. And so they've had this this kind of like moonlighting-esque romance through the series, in that they're together, but they're not in a romantic relationship. But there's attraction there, and you can sense it. Although it really seems on the surface to be more mm-hmm. one-sided, and that Brack is more interested mm-hmm. in Darcy than she appears to be in him. But she always seems to come around him, which then I would hope leads the reader to see that she does like him, but she's not quite either ready for a relationship with him, or she hasn't quite accepted the fact that he's probably the one for her. But where she's different than other news correspondents is that she comes from a wealthy family, so she understands the knack that money buys information, and she's got some money. That's how she gets her information, and she develops her sources, who know that she'll pay for good information, and so that's how she becomes a successful news correspondent, because of the sources she's able to nurture, I guess. And she's in Atlanta. I'm sorry.
You got to bring her back. Are you going to bring her back? I hope.
Well, there's a at the end of Big City Heat, I don't want to ruin it for the reader, but yeah, Darcy
no,
and Brack
she's
still going to be around.
That's all they have to know, because they really should read the book, otherwise they won't get to know what else happens. Seriously, no spoilers around here, people. So Brack, I love this guy. He reminds me of me in so many ways, because I can be confrontational too, I was told at times. If you're missing me, I'm going to let you know. So why does Brack clash with so many people that he meets, and he won't let too many people get close to him? How come? Including anybody.
He's had some tragedy in his life, in that, you know, things were going fine for him. This is before book one. He was married, and he was about to hit it big in the NASCAR circuit, and his life was perfect. And then his wife ends up getting sick and passing away, which sends him totally off the rails, which is why he ends up as a Marine in Afghanistan, because life to him doesn't really matter for a while. And when the series starts, he's just kind of trying to get his life back together. So he's had that tragedy, and then his uncle's murdered, and he solves the crime, but he still lost a loving relative who was like his father to him. So he does have issues getting close to people, and it affects the way he interacts with people, because he's going to have that wall when he first meets people, and it's only certain people are going to get through the wall. So he ends up clashing with more people than he becomes friends with.
So tell us about this other guy that's not such a nice guy, Xavier, and why he wants to meet with Brack, and what happens as a result of that, without telling them what happens.
Vito is a big player in the Atlanta underworld, but he's not the only player. And there's another player, and his name is Xavier Koalas. And Vito, it's like a power grab. They're both struggling to grab each other's territory, and they both eventually recognize in Brack that they could use him to knock the other one off. It's just whichever one can get Brack to kind of work with them. Because in the book, there's the quote, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And Xavier tries to woo Brack with that philosophy that, you know, they're both don't like Vito, so why don't we team up and get him? But Brack's not really ready to he might dip his toe in the pool of darkness, but he's not ready to just go for a big swim. So he's kind of, he and Xavier don't exactly hit it off, I guess would be the way to put it.
Well, I'm looking at the book, and I won't tell everything, but how come when they find Reagan, how come she wants to stay with Vito? I mean, really, she doesn't care. Seems like she doesn't want to be found. She just likes to stay with him. What's the draw with him that she finds so wonderful?
I think it's just a lesson in life, in that you know, if we end up going down a dark path or a path that's not healthy for us, either we're going to have the aha moment and realize this probably isn't the best thing for me, and I'm going to start going the other way and get my life back on track, or or the flip side of that is I like where I am, and I like, you know, I just want to stay here. And I think that's where Reagan is, that she doesn't want to come back to the good side and be with her sister and have a healthy life. She likes the darkness. She likes the power and the control and everything that goes with it. So to her, giving that up is anti what she's all about. And so that's why she wants to stay with Vito. It's not necessarily Vito in and of himself. It's what he can bring to the table for her, what he offers her. And I think that's telling. Like Brack realized in Afghanistan that it probably was time for him to come home and get back to normal. And so that's why he came back to Charleston and he started trying to get his life in order. But Reagan, at this point in her life, is not ready to mend ways and be a good person. She likes it in the pit.
So Vito seems to be untouchable. So when they get him, why would they give him immunity? Why did he think he deserved immunity? And they want to grant it. He's not going to do anything until they tell him I'm not getting arrested because I'm Vito.
Yeah. He's got some diplomatic immunity, and he's also he's used that as a power grab to get more influence and more control for his enterprises that he has, and he has several illegal enterprises that provide him money and power. So he's got things on politicians, and he manipulates to keep his influence and his control, and he's found a way to at this point in his life and in the story, he is untouchable, and there are only a few things that are gonna change that, and you know, he realizes that Brack is a risk, and that it could end up bad for Vito, but he does have a lot of power and control and influence in the city at this particular point in the story.
Well, that's lucky for him. So he's into drugs, money laundering, sex trafficking, and other things, and selling the tusks of elephants. That reminds us that these are practically endangered. That is bad. So Reagan wants to run part of his business. Why does he let her? And she seems as heartless as he is. She knows how to run a business just as well as he does, if not worse, if not tougher.
Yeah, again, she's just all about money and power and control, and with Vito in her mind just being a means to an end, if she hoodwinks him into liking her enough to start running a few of his businesses that's just the first step into moving farther up, and maybe at some point moving him out if she can get that much influence over his businesses. But he's just fallen in love with Reagan because that was her game. And I guess some people are blinded by love, and Reagan is the perfect match, but he thinks he's too smart to be hoodwinked, and he doesn't realize that she's just manipulating him.
My poor guy needs to go to dating school, seriously, because if he's that smart, he's blindsided by other things that she's offering. What can I say? So what can I tell Tip? He's poor thing. He needs to, you know, get with the program. So when you describe Cassie, how does she compare in contrast to Reagan? They're sisters, but they're not the same.
Yeah, they in the book they're described as they have similar facial features, but where Reagan is, I guess she has the physique of more of a model. Cassie's more down to earth, kind of a shorter, stockier version But Cassie's got the good hearts, and she's really just trying to help people. She's just trying to run a restaurant business and keep her relationship with Mutt. And that's what she's all about, whereas Reagan is about power and money and control and everything that has to offer. And so in a lot of ways, they're polar opposites. And Cassie, she struggles to see what Reagan really is. She still thinks she can rescue Reagan.
Sometimes some people just don't want to be rescued. They just like where they are, and they don't realize where they are is only going to bring them down. They don't care. So when Cassie gets hurt, how does Mutt feel? And what does he do? How does he react to her getting hurt?
Well, I guess without giving too much away, initially, he's kind of in shock. But he really doesn't handle it well for anybody.
Mm.
He does more damage because she gets hurt than when I write, the characters kind of take over in the writing, and they let me know what they're really going to do versus what I want them to do. And the way Mutt handles this, it showed me who Mutt really was. And like all of us, we have things we're working on and we're trying to get better in our lives. And Mutt's just got some demons that when Cassie gets hurt, those demons just came out and it showed me who he was, but it wasn't necessarily a good thing for Mutt.
I know. It's like, you read the characters in the book, and as Cheryl just emailed me, you really make the characters come alive. You really do. Because I could see Brack, and I could see my favorite dog, and I could see Vito with his, tons of jewelry and his high hat and whatever, and his tight pants and his boots, and just walking in and thinking that he owns the world. A lot of them do. So there are two more characters that I found interesting. Those are the two reverends. What was their mission and what were their goals? And how did they come into play to help everyone, especially Brother Thomas?
Yeah, Brother Thomas, because I like continuity in my characters, and he came about in the first book, and he's been with Brack throughout the series. And Brother Thomas is really Brack's conscience. He's all 350 pounds and 6'3" of him. He's a very commanding character. He believes in serving his community, and he realizes that he can influence, not in a bad way, but he can provide a positive influence for Brack, who he recognizes he really needs it. So he befriends Brack, and they have this relationship where Brack, when he's thinking right, he asks Brother Thomas for advice, and when he's not thinking right, he doesn't listen to what Brother Thomas tells him. And it's always funny to me, depending on where Brack is in the story, as to which side he's going to fall on in that, whether he listens to Brother Thomas or not. And the times when he doesn't listen to Brother Thomas, he usually regrets. So Brother Thomas comes to Atlanta to help Brack out when he realizes that Brack is kind of in a mess. The other reverend in the book is Reverend Cleophas, and he's really Brother Thomas's contact in the city. And so what I've learned with churches is that the ministers in different churches have contacts in other cities. And so Reverend Cleophas is Brother Thomas's contact in Atlanta. And they realize that Brack is in the heart of a lot of what's ailing Reverend Cleophas's church. He's losing some of his parishioners to the sex trafficking and the drugs, and Brack is right in the middle of chipping away at Vito's empire, and they realize that Brack is onto something. And so what also kind of cracks me up about Brother Thomas is that he's always, in serving the community, he's always asking for a volunteer to help him with a community project. And it comes about in Big City Heat as well. They've got a few community projects that they need Brack to help them with, one being two missing young ladies who they believe are got sucked up into the sex trafficking. And so Brack is always loyal to his friends, and he wants to do the right thing. And he realizes he came to Atlanta to find one missing woman, and he ends up having to find three. And so that's just the relationship with him and Brother Thomas, that Brother Thomas is there for him, but he's always asking him to do a little bit more. So.
Yeah, but when he does find those cool girls, I'm not going to give away what happens, but does how come they tell him to get away? That they wanted to stay where they were. And they knew they were going to be in trouble. They knew they were going to whatever. But yet, when he finds them, they tell him, you know, get lost. And they run and they get away. How come? Why would they want to stay with them when they were afraid?
I guess in that I didn't go into too much detail in the book, but in thinking about it, and hopefully it reads that they're probably also at a point in their lives where they're in the middle of something that's not healthy for them, but they're.
Mm-hmm.
One, it could be they're not ready to get out of it as well, or that they it could be more harmful for them if they did try to get out of it and didn't, and then they have to face their overseers, I guess, and they realize that it might be more dangerous for them at that point to try to help Brack than to just let them know that there's this guy here who approached them and he's probably you guys need to do something about this. So it could go either way. I don't go into detail, but I think there's probably a little of both of those and with those two characters.
Yeah, definitely. So I would be remiss if I didn't bring in Tara and her other job. She has something else that she does. And could you tell us about that? That's not her only job at the bar. And, of course, Shayna is someone else that's close to her. But tell us about the other job that she does, and tell us about the elephant, because I love Mr. Grumpy. He's my favorite character in the book.
So I created a fictitious elephant sanctuary outside of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, for elephants, I'm just tired of reading about the slaughter of elephants.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I would just put I like elephants, and I thought, well, this might be an interesting opportunity to put one in the book and have an elephant play a not so minor part. So Tara, she moonlights as a bartender in Mutt's Bar, but her real job is she works at this elephant sanctuary taking care of the animals. And Mr. Grumpy is kind of the one that's I don't want to say pet, because how do you have a pet elephant, but that's the one that she takes care of and she's kind of bonded with. Excuse me. But like Brack, Mr. Grumpy has a hard time with most people, but he seems to have bonded with Tara. And she's the only one that can really feed him and take care of him. And I just like that aspect of Tara, and that she's kind of an animal activist and, you know, she's a strong person, but she works in this animal sanctuary, and I just liked having that in the book. And I liked the putting Brack in that situation and having that sanctuary play a not so minor part in the book. And Mr. Grumpy as a character, he and Brack are kind of like two peas in a pod. They both, I guess Mr. Grumpy recognizes in Brack that he has trouble with people as well. And so Mr. Grumpy likes Brack right away. And so they kind of have a little bit of a bond as well. So I really enjoyed having that aspect of Tara in the book. Shayna,
sort of,
who you asked, I'm sorry.
They gave her the gentle side. I liked her. Yeah. I like that. And she's still my favorite. But, you know, you're right, because I read A Tone for the Ivory Cloud by Jeffrey Wells, and that one deals with the same thing and people selling elephant tusks for money and killing the elephant, and I think that's horrible. Endangered species, and the heck with ivory, and it even deals with, you know, what people still have there. Yeah, he's my favorite character. So when things heat up, why do so many people get hurt? And why does Nicholas detain Brack? Every time he gets in trouble, Brack, Detective Nicholas grounds him sort of and yells at him and says, you know, brings him in. And I was like, get with the program. He's not doing anything wrong. How come you have such this, you know, like difficult interaction between the two of them? They hate each other.
Well, I think what Nichols, he gets to a point with Brack that he realizes that Brack's probably not going away. And so then he kind of gets the mindset of the underworld kingpins in that, okay, if Brack's not going away, maybe he can use him to knock out one of these underworld guys. And so he cuts Brack enough slack to either give him enough rope to hang himself or to knock out one of these kingpins. Now in, you know, thank God for fiction and in real life that may or may not happen. I don't know, but I just enjoyed giving a side of Nichols to like, well, maybe I can use this loose cannon in my town to help me out here with the problem that I've got. So Brack initially is a nuisance to him, but then he realizes that maybe Brack, you know, he's not a bad guy. He just has some chaotic tendencies, I guess, and maybe he can use those to knock out one of the kingpins.
He's headstrong, and he's impulsive. He's like so many people I know, and sometimes he doesn't think through, but he's got a good heart. That I know. But before I forget, next week on the 1st, I'm going to be interviewing Pat Graff, Genocide. Very interesting book about what happens when a group of people decide that they're going to rid the world of people that they don't feel are good enough to be on this planet. That's all I'll say about that. On the 31st, on May 31st, I'm going to be doing with former FBI agent Michael Tabman, and I are going to be talking about up close and personal the Manchester attacks. And we're going to deal with what caused it, how Ariana Grande's dealt with it, what she's doing now to help the 22 victims, the families of the 22 victims, and it's amazing. There's a lot of negative about her, but this is one of those positives. On the 5th, I'm interviewing New York Times author Jennifer James, The Stranger Inside. That's a great book. And on the 14th, Practicing Normal. That's a really good book, too. And on the 20th, my last one until August, people, I'm taking July off, A Fine Imitation. And I will begin in August again with the author of 66 Metra. And that should be really interesting, too, because the book is good. And this book deals with friendships, loyalties, trust, understanding betrayals, drugs, selling women, and even animal abuse. How did you incorporate so many issues and yet keep the plot going? And I could follow every single one of them.
I guess for me, and thank you for asking that question, in what I see and what I've read, the underground, the underworld doesn't specialize in one thing or another. They kind of have their hands in all the illegal pies, gambling, sex trafficking, drugs, anything that'll make a buck, including like the sale of ivory or you know, rare species. Mm. So for me to make the Vito or Xavier more realistic, I felt that they kind of had to have their hands in all those pies a little bit. As they gain influence and power, they're branching out. So for me, Brack tripping over, he would trip over more than just one of them in his investigation of trying to find Reagan or his hunt for Reagan. And, So I guess that's why I did that, because in what I've come across and you read in other books and as you do research, when you got sex trafficking, you probably also have drug use and drug abuse in there. So those two, I think, are kind of linked. To me, it was more realistic to have the plethora of vices as opposed to just one.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, Reagan and there's Vito and there were so many young girls today, because you read it in the news, that find the allure of money and power and someone to give them everything they want, and they only have to do one thing for that or whatever, and sex trafficking and selling young women, and it's so sad. What would you tell young girls today to be more careful of? I mean, it does happen. It is happening as we speak. That's what the sad part is. It happens all over the world. So when someone gets involved with this as a young girl, is she so vulnerable because she has nothing else in her life? Well, what lesson can we learn to, you know, the red flags to say, don't do this?
Well, when I grew up, it wasn't, I guess, that long ago, but it was long ago enough to where I think we're still some innocents. I think today it's very prevalent, and I think that with social media, it's easier to interact with strangers who you might not, who you think based on their online presence is somebody you can trust, but you don't really know anything except with what they tell you online, which is they can control every aspect of that. And I guess if they're in touch with a vulnerable person at the wrong time in their life, it's easy, I guess, to fall into that path. And I feel for these young people who get involved in these things unwittingly, and then they find themselves in something that's hard for them to get out of. So I guess be cautious and realize that it's not a game. It's your life that you're kind of playing with. So be diligent and proactive with your decisions.
Okay, one of my favorite things is that he calls him Opie. How come? I watched Andy of Mayberry, and I know what Opie is, and Brack is not an Opie. Why did you decide to nickname him Opie? I mean, that's hilarious.
I think Mutt's African American and Brack is Caucasian. I think that was Mutt's way to needle Brack. Because Brack has a lot of connection with the African American community in Charleston, and that's just way for Mutt to needle him a little bit. And he's accepting of Brack and their brothers in arms. It's just one of those things that he's always constantly digging him with, I guess.
Who is Levin? We have about 10 minutes. So who is Levin and who is Townsend and what do they have to do with Vito? How do they get caught up with this and who's really in charge?
So Vito is the kingpin, but he's got second in command who's Levin, who's also he kind of controls the biker gangs and the foot soldiers. But and so Brack interacts with Levin in there, and Levin is also the one who recruits a lot of the young women to get into the sex trafficking. Townsend is he's an ex-soldier, but he's a mercenary, and Vito uses Townsend for his military skill for like his own personal security and anything that he has to do in that realm. So Levin is a slicker. He's more political with Vito, and Townsend is just more of a soldier. And I like putting Brack against Townsend, especially when they first meet, because they both realize that they're going to be enemies. And I liked ratcheting up the tension to when those two would finally duke it out. Townsend is very skilled, and Brack has probably met his match with him as far as being able somebody who could he might not be able to actually take down one-on-one. They're both bad guys, but they both bring different qualities to the table for Vito to use to broaden his empire.
So tell us, there's one more character I didn't talk about, and that's Darcy's boyfriend, Justin. Where does he come into all of this? I don't like him, by the way.
So Darcy came from a wealthy family, and I like the thought that sometimes in wealthy families, there's more of like an arranged marriage type situation in that you don't associate with the different classes. So they try to get their children to stay within their own class and basically protect the income and have alliances with the powerful families. And so Darcy, whether she likes it or not, her parents kind of betrothed her to this Justin character. She's not really, she tries to make a go at it with him, and that's why she moves to Atlanta to try to fall in line with what her parents really want for her future. But there's a lot of conflict there because Darcy's not really quite sure if that's what her future really is. And Justin's, I'm sure he's an okay guy, I guess, in most circumstances, but he's, compared to Brack, he's more of an academic. So there's just the difference between Justin and Brack and who is Darcy going to end up with. But, you know, Justin's kind of a rich snob. So obviously he's got some character flaws, I guess, that I kind of like manipulating her. So.
How did you create, before we have about 9 minutes, how did you create that last sanctuary scene without telling anybody what happens? That was absolutely amazing.
I knew I wanted to put I wanted the elephants to kind of have a not so minor part in the book. So having a scene, one of the closing scenes of the sanctuary made sense to me for a lot of reasons. And I also kind of believe in justice, I guess I'll say. So how that scene came about and what happened, I think that some people got what they deserved, and they got what they deserved not just because they're bad people, but because of what they were doing and what they were supporting. So I just like having in the bond between some animals and humans. I like that. Just like with Brack and his dog Shelby, and Tara with Mr. Grumpy. I just like the bond that humans can have with animals, and how does that influence situations, and how do they come together?
Yeah, that's
I hope I, talk, I hope I said enough about that and didn't give it away, I guess.
You didn't give it away, and anybody that wants to know how to give it away, you better read it. But we have a lot of people. As a matter of fact, FBI agent Michael Tabin was listening, and Barbara Nicholas is listening, and a whole bunch of people are listening, which is very good because everybody listens. And when I post the review,
awesome.
I can guarantee everybody's going to read it. They do. I don't know why. Just in 10 seconds I get, this is really good, you know, blah, blah, blah. As a matter of fact, the other day I posted a review, and then this guy said, could you review my book? I go, wait a minute, you're not supposed to put that there. So I never know. So the ending leaves us wondering what's going to happen next. So what's next for Brack and for you? And without giving this away.
I'm starting thanks for asking that. The Big City Heat is the third book in the Brack Pelton series. I'm actually starting a new series, and the first book comes out in September. It's called In It for the Money. And it's also the Brack Pelton series is predominantly set in Charleston, but this Big City Heat happens to be set in Atlanta for a lot of different reasons. But it's for the most part, it's set in Charleston, South Carolina. And my new series is also going to be set in Charleston. And I have a new protagonist. His name is Blue Caraway, and he's an actual PI, whereas Brack is what you call an amateur sleuth. He's not a professional. This new guy is a PI, and he deals with some rough cases. I wanted to keep the series set in Charleston, and I also wanted to kind of blend the two series together a little bit. So you're going to see Brack make a few guest appearances in this Blue Caraway series, especially in this first book.
Oh,
just
nice.
Like there's another Brack Pelton book in the works. I'm not sure when it's going to come out yet, maybe in the next 12 to 18 months, where Blue Caraway will play a part in it. But I actually brought them together. My new publisher suggested that with a new series, maybe I could write a novella. And so what I chose to do with a novella, which is only available via ebook, it's called Blue Heat. The Brack and Blue work together in this novella. And I really like putting those two guys together to kind of work together to see how they would mesh. And so based on that novella, it gave me hope that there's a future for both of them in each other's books. So I guess I said all that to say that you're going to see more of Brack, you're going to see more of Darcy, and you're going to see these characters in both series, although Brack will be predominant in his series and Blue will be predominant in his series. But I like, for example, what John Sanford does with Lucas Davenport and Virgil Flowers and how he kind of brings them both into each other's books. I like to do that with Brack and Blue in their books.
That's good. Are you going to do another blog tour for this one with Cheryl in September?
Yes, absolutely. Cheryl does a great job. We get a lot of exposure through her, and I really appreciate that. And she's always on top of things, sending me updates, letting me know what's going on. So thank you so much, Cheryl. I know you're listening. You're really very helpful, and you do great things for authors. I appreciate it.
Yes, she does, and she sends me everything, even if I don't want it, but I always want it. And then they'll email me and say, "You didn't read this one? How could you not sign up?" Seriously. And there's nobody reading the book. Yeah, there's 97 people, but we need you to read it. And I read it anyway. I just finished, I should say, some of my favorite picks besides Big City Heat. Genocide was really good. It's very scary, but it was really good. Shifting Sands by Michael Shusko. And the one that I just finished, Cheryl, which was fantastic, was and scared the daylights out of me, Forbidden, by F. Stone. And it's a really serious, where the mayor and the chief of police are bad and corrupt, and the captain, and they want to take him down in order to hide a cover-up of 15 Americans from Habitat of Humanity that get killed, and they don't want anybody to know. And what these people go through, and there's one survivor, and how she and the captain are the only two that, you know what really happened and whether they stay alive or not. Oh, it's scary, but it's good. And I am reading 66 Metro, but I think what I'm going to do is, like my friends at FedEx said, that they would Xerox it for me and make it larger so I could read it and do a better job. So before we end, where can everybody find out about you, your whole series? And by the way, people, Father's Day is coming up. So why don't you just get a whole bunch of books? So this is a guidebook, seriously. So I don't know why you wouldn't get a whole bunch of them. Seriously. So where can everybody find out about you and your work?
Well, first of all, I'd really like to say thank you for having me on your show. And thank you for what you do for authors and how you connect us with readers. I really, really appreciate that. And thank you for this. This has been a wonderful experience for me. You can find me on my website, www.davidburnsworthbooks.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and Goodreads. So thank you again for everything you've done for me for this interview. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And when you see the 27 stars in about a minute, you'll know. I have to be honest, the show is being taped and recorded because Blog Talk monitors everything everybody does. But I only, and Cheryl knows this, and Wendy and Gina know, I only interview people whose books are basically 4.5 to 5 stars. Because if a book isn't, you know, quality, I'm not going to interview the author and I'm not going to even review the book. I'll just write a summary. So thank you so much. I'm glad this worked out, and I hope that you want to do the show again when the next book comes out in September, whenever that is. Oh, don't worry. It's my birthday, September, and you know somewhere in there we'll fit in a show. Don't worry about that. So, guys, I will see you next Wednesday. And if anybody wants to listen, yeah, should be interesting to talk about the Manchester attacks and genocide. What happens when a group of people called the capital sinners decide that they're going to take out the rest of the people in the world that sort of don't fit in? So, David, thank you so much. Cheryl, be the best. Have a great day, everybody. The rain is still coming down. They're still banging and doing my renovations, and I hope everybody has a great day, and bye.
Thank you.